Tonight we will again begin with three questions, and you'll tell me which ones you want to talk about. We got the following issue that came up. I don't even know if you call it a shaila. I guess it's part of what we have to determine. There's a fellow who, Baruch Hashem, enjoys nice shalom bayis with his wife. And, you know, they go through the normal stresses of life, raising young children, paying yeshiva tuition, making ends meet while paying yeshiva tuition. You know, the regular stresses and difficulties and challenges that a family goes through. But because of all of these challenges and the regular stresses of life, the husband and wife hadn't been on a vacation together or even anywhere, just together without their kids, for about a decade. They hadn't been able to go even for like a weekend, even for a long weekend. They finally, I don't know whether it was points or whatever, they finally had something where the wife was already being paid for by her business and the husband was able to come along. They finally had the opportunity to go away for like a 4-day weekend, and they had someone take care of the children, everything else, and it was going to be perfect because they were supposed to leave on a Thursday. Her Lel Tevila to go to the mikveh was the preceding Monday, the previous Monday, and then on Monday night, and then on Monday afternoon, she sees a kesem, a stain, and they bring the shayla to the Rav, and the Rav says, I'm sorry, this is no good, she's going to have to start her Shiva Nikiyim again, she's going to have to start counting her 7 clean days again. So the guy I was not the rabbi that gave the psak, but the rabbi, the guy was like very disappointed. So he called me up. So is there a shayla here? Right? No, sometimes there's no shayla. Sometimes the person just needs a hug, right? You know, like a guy in my shul told me that right after Hurricane Sandy, this guy, he's pretty good with his hands, and he spent every Sunday for like 6 months redoing his basement with the sheetrock and the electricity and everything. 6 months redoing his basement. And then like he made a party, a kiddush he made in his shul, in his house rather, after shul, to celebrate the completion of his basement. And then that week, Sandy hit, and the entire basement was... So one of his neighbors saw him, one of his friends saw him emptying stuff out of his house onto his front lawn, and the guy was driving by, and the guy stops his car, walks out without a word, just goes and gives him a hug, and goes back into his car, right? Sometimes it's all a person needs. The person just needs a hug. But is there a shiloh over here? So I think there might be a shiloh over here. I think the shiloh is, can you go ask a different rabbi? I mean, very often people have different mesoras. You know what they say about Hasidim, or many Hasidim, they have a much more makel mesora on what's considered red and what's not considered red. I think they say the story about Rabbi Cheskel Roth, that he was being driven somewhere, and he asked the driver, why did you stop? The driver said, it's a red light. He said, you think that's red? You know, that's his mesora, it's not red. So that's shaila number one. So you let it go ask a different rabbi, and even if the other rabbi's makel doesn't even work once he already got his psak. Shaila number two, a Talmud of mine, two Talmudim brothers, lost their grandmother last week. She passed away at, I believe, a ripe old age. These Talmidim are Kohanim. So the older brother is married and his wife is pregnant. So the Talmud was going to be, it's his grandmother, it's not his mother, so he's going to be standing outside with the Kohanim. His question was, does his wife, who is pregnant, also need to stand outside because of the fetus, or is she allowed to go in? So that is shaila number two. Shaila number three is a bit of a story, but bear with me a little bit on it. A 38-year-old frum woman, we'll call her Mrs. Goldberg, that is not her name, but we'll call her Mrs. Goldberg because that's what you're supposed to, I don't know, that's the standard name, I think, for a Jewish woman, right? So she always knew growing up that she was adopted, but her parents never told her much about the circumstances of her background, and extremely secretive. She suspects, based on some level of evidence, that her adoption was not legal, that it was the parents gave a suitcase full of money to you know, some teenager who had a baby and you know, in South Carolina or something, and so whatever it is, she has no confidence whatsoever that her birth mother is Jewish, although her parents say, oh, don't worry, we were told your birth mother is Jewish, but she's pretty sure that's not the case. Her parents converted her right away when they adopted her. Her parents are not religious, but they converted her right away when they adopted her with a conservative rabbi. When she, at the age of 12, decided to become frum, she converted with an Orthodox rabbi. She did a second conversion with an Orthodox rabbi, but she loved davening so much that she used to love to go to shul every day in the Hebrew school and lain. So she, even after her Orthodox conversion, she used to still go to the Hebrew school minyan and lain all the time. She loved leaning from the Torah. So when she got really, really frum, you know, a little bit later on, she thought maybe that would call her earlier conversion into question. So she converted again with one of the Gedolei Aposkim in America, with you know, with his basin. Very interesting woman, very, very frum woman. Very anyway, so she has all sorts of medical issues that come up all the time. And every time a medical issue comes up, the doctors ask family history, and she says, "I have no idea." Okay, this is her situation. Recently, based on a doctor's recommendation, she took a DNA test. You know, you swab and you send in, and they tell you you're whatever 2% or 0.0014% Native American, and whatever you're entitled to, whatever, right? So you know, they give you all sorts of information. So she took a DNA test, and they said, "Oh, by the way, you have a sister." I said, "What?" "Yeah, you have a sister, and we can identify her for you. She lives two towns over from where this woman lives." Right? This woman lives in North Woodmere. Sister lives like in Gibson or something. You know, like two towns over from where she lives. Not only that, this woman grew up in Hewlett, and the sister grew up mamish, like 2 miles away. In also adopted by a Jewish family, also a non-religious family, and they cheshbined that at some point, there's no way that they had never been in the same room together. At some point, certainly during high school, their high schools used to play a major basketball game against each other every year, and the whole school, both schools came. There were definitely parties that they were both invited to, you know, as youngsters. They definitely were in the same room together, and likely, if they were in the same room together, they were confused for each other, because now she met her sister and they look exactly alike. So there's no doubt that this is her biological sister. Okay, so she starts reconnecting with this biological sister of hers, and but like we said, both adopted by Jewish families, the newly discovered sister has had a very different life experience than Mrs. Goldberg. You see, Mrs. Goldberg grew up with, granted, not religious parents, but very supportive parents. And she became a Baal Teshuva, and that was very difficult for her parents. They were not happy about that, but ultimately they came around, and now they volunteer in the yeshiva where, you know, her kids go to school and everything. Like, you know, very supportive parents, very nice family situation as far as that is concerned. Not everything was perfect, but a very nice family situation. Her sister did not have nearly as good an experience. Her sister was adopted by a Jewish family. She, as a little girl, she was in a car with her adoptive mother, and they got into a terrible car accident, and her adoptive mother was killed, and her adoptive father immediately turned abusive. He went out of his mind, he went berserk, and he stopped feeding her and started doing all sorts of crazy things. And this sister somehow got her life together enough to get married to a guy, but got married, and has a couple of young kids, but never really had any family. Never really had anybody outside of her husband, never really had anybody. So she is very, very eager. Now that they found each other, she is very eager to find the birth mother. Now, Mrs. Goldberg knows that it would absolutely kill her parents if she went looking for her birth mother, or if she would even try to meet her birth mother. But the sister really wants to, and Mrs. Goldberg also would like to have a little bit of family history in terms of medical conditions and things like that. Not that she's not ill and she doesn't have any, you know, imminent sakana that's happening, but, you know, would be helpful. So she wanted to know, should she obey her parents' wishes not to look for the birth mother? Does she have a right to say, "I don't care what they say, I'm going to look for..." Whose rutzon wins over here? Her sister? Her parents? Does the potential feelings of the birth mother matter in this situation? So that is Shaila number 3. It's a much more complicated story, but I'm not going to get into more details than that. So that is Shaila number 3. So again, we have the guy who asked the Ilchus Nida Shaila and got the wrong answer, or the answer that he didn't want. We have the Talmud, the pregnant Kohenes, and going to the funeral, and we have Mrs. Goldberg.
Number 1 and 3.
Okay, so we'll start with 1, and then we'll go to 3, I guess. Okay, yeah. Sounds reasonable. Okay. So like I said, sometimes people just need a hug and a little bit of chizuk, and that was my first reaction, was to say, "Listen, all right, no, this is you know, it should come as a reminder. And you know, obviously a little Shalom Bayis coaching at a time like that, you get, not so many of you are married, but like, at a time like that, you have to be reminded, it's not her fault, she didn't try to become a Nida, you know, she's not, like, don't take out your frustration on her, and she's probably more upset than you are, you know, that kind of, a little bit of reminder, a little bit of coaching in that regard, and maybe a little reminder that this is not the greatest Mesiras Nefesh any Jew in the history of mankind has ever had to go through. You know, Jews, I've heard, have gone through worse than not being able to take the four-day vacation. It's frustrating, not belittling it, but, you know, it's that level, that small Mesiras Nefesh should be a building block for the relationship. A reminder of the story of Rav Moshe, you know, Rabbi Aaron Pam told me that Rav Pam's son, Rav Aaron Pam, told me that you know, if you ever notice, Rav Moshe's two oldest children were girls, and his two younger children were boys, and there was a gap between child number two and child number three, right, between the second girl and the first boy, between, I guess, Rav David and, I guess, Rebbetzin Tendler. There was an age gap between the two. And he said, why was there such an age gap between the two? So the story that was always told was that Rav Moshe was in Russia, and the communists shut down, the government shut down the mikveh, so there was no way that his wife could go to the mikveh. So Rav Aaron Pam told me that he heard from reliable sources that was not what happened. They actually had an underground mikveh that no one knew about. Rav Moshe figured the following cheshbon. He said, if everyone else continues to have children and continues to live normally, so the government will figure, okay, they're not such Yirei Shemayim, you know. The rank and file is not going to stop living like man and wife just because they don't have a mikveh. He says, but if I continue to be able to have children, then they're going to realize there's a mikveh somewhere, they're going to find it, and they're going to shut it down, and it's going to cost the whole community. So Moshe's wife didn't go to the mikveh for like 4 years. And, you know, so a little Mesiras Nefesh, you know, obviously we're not all of Ramesha, you know, but like, you know, maybe a reminder like that. But there's more to it over here, because really his question was, he didn't ask it this way, but, you know, thinking, his question was, can I ask another rabbi? Am I allowed to go ask somebody else? So are you? Are you allowed to go, once you're ready, asked and answered. Are you allowed to go ask somebody else? So this is a sugya in Shas. It's a sugya several places in Shas. The Gemara in Maseches Nidan Daf Chav tells us, Chacham Shetime Ein Chaveru Rashi Letahir. If one Chacham is Metame, Mamish like this, one Chacham is Metame, another Chacham is not allowed to then go be Metar that same Shaila. Asar Ein Chaveru Rashi Lahatir. If one Chacham says something is Asar, another Chacham is not allowed to come and be Matir the same thing that the first Chacham Asar. A similar Gemara, but not exactly the same. Avodazar Dav Zayin Chulun Dav Mem Dalid Hanisha Lechacham Vetime Lo Yisha Lechacham Vietar. Not Chacham Shetime, Hanisha Lechacham Vetime Lo Yisha Lechacham Vietar. Lechacham Vyasa Lo Yisha Lechacham Vietar. And then, of course, there's the phrase that Chazal used in Masech Sanhedrin Dav Chavtas, Kvar Horazake. At certain times we say, Kvar Horazakin, it's already been paskin. A lot of times you find that in Shaila Tshuva literature, you know, if there's a Shaila that's already been dealt with by the Chassam Sofer or something, so a contemporary posuk will say, what am I going to talk about? Kvar Horazakin, it's already been paskin. Of course, you find many, many times where people do argue on previous Tshuvas and Tshuvas of greater gedolim than themselves, but sometimes they like to say Kvar Horazakin, depending on the circumstance. But that's the phrase the Gemara Masech Sanhedrin uses. So it sounds like there's definitely an issue over here that you're not allowed to do. But what exactly is the issue? Meaning, who's not allowed to do what? For example, who's the Yisra'an? What does it sound like from the Gemara? Chacham Shetir Shetime Ein Chavero Rashi Letar. So who's the Yisra'an? The rabbi, right? It's not an issue, Isra on the guy. But the other Gemara, Hanishal Lechacham Betime Lo Yishal Lechacham Itar. Well, Nishal means the guy who's being asked. That's also on the rabbi, no? So it says, and truth is, Tosfos Maseches Avodah Zarah says it is an Isra on the Rav, not on the questioner. But we do find a lot of times Nishal does not mean the one who's being asked, it means the one who's asking. For example, Sanhedrin Samachay, Hanishal Ba'ovi Yadoni. So it's not the Nishal, it's the someone who's seeking out Ovi Yadoni. Or you have in Yuma Dafayin Alf, Einish Olin Burum Vetumim Elamelech. It's not nishalin, it's not the one who's being asked. For whatever reason, we use this terminology describing the person who's doing the asking. Nida dafhei, safik tuma habab yidei adam, nishalin aleha. Nishalin aleha means shawalin aleha. We ask about it. So you do find that lashon. So it could be that there's an isser on the questioner as well. But either way, what is the isser exactly? What's the prohibition of asking another? You know, what's so wrong? You go to a doctor, and the doctor tells you something that's a little bit scary, or even that sounds too good to be true. So what do? You get a second opinion. Always, nothing wrong with that. It used to be you'd have to go to another doctor for a second opinion. Now everyone comes to the doctor, they already diagnose themselves. They just need the doctor to confirm it with and write a script for them. But they already know because they have the internet. So they know, you don't need to go to medical school anymore. So we were telling this to Rav Schechter. Someone was telling him that it's not right that that everyone just Googles Shaila and they think that they know the answer. So there was a few of us sitting around. So someone told Rav Schechter, you know, it's not just rabbis, it's by doctors also. All the doctors complain that people come in and they think that they know everything that there is to know because they went on WebMD or something and they discovered something about an illness. So he was shocked to hear that. He never did. He said, I don't know, I do everything my doctor tells me to do. I never thought about, you know, looking anywhere else. So, but that's probably the right mahalik. But at least a second opinion is normal, though. A second opinion is what you're supposed to. So what's so bad about getting a second opinion in halacha? What's the isser? Misvara, what's the isser? What? Shopping for kulas. Let's say you're shopping for a chumrah. Sometimes people do that. I've given a kula to a person and said, come on, they weren't happy about that. Someone called me about, can they use the Erev in Brooklyn? So I said, let me look into it. I don't know anything about Brooklyn. I mean, I knew Ramesh has a tshuva, he's against it, but I didn't really know anything. So I don't know much about, like, outside of my Dalai Lama. So I said, let me look into it. He said, Rabbi, I do not want to have to go to Brooklyn for a Shabbos. So... Okay, so it's awesome. You know, sometimes people are shopping for a chumrah. They're looking. They're not looking for a kula. So what would the isser be? Okay, shopping for a kula. One possibility. Anything else? What? Kavod of the first chacham. Rashi, Maseches Nida, Kavod Shel Rishon. He asked the chacham. He gave you a psak. It's not right to go ask somebody else. It's not right to his own kavod. The Ran Maseches Avodah Zarah Shel Yira Kishtei Toros. It shouldn't look like there are two Torahs. That look, oh, for that rabbi it's mutter, for that rabbi it's asura, something. It's not a cohesive single Torah. The Rush, Maseches Avodah Zarah, says something different entirely. It says, Shavya Nafshei Chaticha Di Yisura. When you go and you ask a Shaila, implicit in the Shaila is that I am accepting whatever your tshuva is, whatever your answer is. And that's what I'm accepting upon myself to do. So that's the principle of Shavya Nafshei Chaticha Di Yisura, whether it is Asur or not, I'm accepting it upon myself as Isur. Wow, now what's Shavya Nafshei Chaticha Di Yisura based on? So that's a big discussion in Rishonim, Achronim. It's a famous ketzos about this. Why does that happen? Just because I decided that it should be asur? So now that's it? It automatically becomes asur to me? So there are a few different shitos. The ketzos in Simon Lamed Daled writes that it's very similar to Odos Baldin Kameya Edim Dami. That you have ne'amanus, just like a Baldin has ne'amanus to say, I owe money. So you have ne'amanus to say that something's asur for yourself. The Shittim Gubetza says, Midin Neder. That it's midin neder, just like you can take something that's totally mutra and make it asur for you, just by you can create an issur daraisa through a neder. So shavya nafshei works midin neder, and then there's the truma sakri in the back of the. It used to be printed in the back of the ketzos. I don't even know where to find it in the new ketzos, but in the old ketzos, you know, the ones that have like the Rashi letters that you could barely read and like all the typos, right? So like a real ketzos, you know, like a, so they used to have the truma sakri printed in the back. So I'm not sure where it is now. But in the Truma Sakri, he writes that that it's midin hanhaga klape atzmo, meaning if you believe something to be true, even if you're dead wrong, and we don't believe you at all, but you believe it to be true, so then you have to be consistent with that. You know, there was a video going around on the guys in my shiur know this. I mentioned there was a video going around online a little while ago about people asking Chaim Kanievsky about wearing tcheles. So they asked Rav Chaim Kanievsky, if you hold that this is Tcheles, that it's the real thing, that the Murex trunculus is the real thing, should you wear it? He said, if you're convinced that it's the right thing, then you're mechayev to wear it, of course. It's a mitzvah daraisa. So people were misinterpreting that and say, you see, Reb Chaim holds that it's the real Tcheles. No, he doesn't hold it's real Tcheles. He thinks you're Meshuggah. He thinks that we're all crazy. He thinks that it's not at all, right? But if you hold it is, you can't hold something's a mitzvah daraisa and then not do it. Right? Meaning, that's like what Truma Sakri is saying. If you hold that this woman is asked, right, that someone calls you up, recommends a shidduch for you, and you say, I'm sorry, I can't go out with her. Well, why can't you go out with her? She's my sister. Well, what are you talking about? She's not your sister, you know? That's not true at all. She's Sephardic, you're Ashkenazic, she's tall, you're short, she's whatever. There's no way. You don't have the same birth. She's not your sister. No, I believe. I'm telling you, she's my sister. So if you really believe she's your sister, you're nuts. You're out of your mind. But you're not allowed to marry her if you believe she's a sister. That's the Truma Sakri. That's how my understanding, at least, of the Truma Sakri. So okay, so we have these. And by the way, a lot of nafkaminas between the three understandings of Shavya Nafshei Chadik Disura. Right? Can a Mufla Samach Leish be Shavya Nafshei Chadik Disura? It's Midin Neder. Mufla Samach Leish could be Midin Neder. But all the others, maybe not. Maybe he has no Ne'amanus. A guy doesn't realize that what he's saying means that something's going to be us. So it's hard to say it's midin neder, right? He's just talking, and he doesn't realize. A lot of times, people don't realize the ramifications of what they're saying. Nedvida is a tshuva where I think the shaila we discussed last week. Nedvida had the tshuva where the guy, a couple was engaged, and the woman was suddenly pregnant, and the guy claimed the chassan said, the woman said it was from my chassan. This baby is my chassan's baby. And the chassan said, not me. And he didn't realize that by saying not me, it means he can't marry her because she's Mubaris Chaveiro. But he didn't realize that what he was saying was making her asur. He was just trying to proclaim his innocence. So sometimes people say things, they don't realize the ramifications of what they're saying. So can you say such a thing as midin neder, that he's taking a neder on himself? Probably not. Can you say later, whoops, I made a mistake, right? Can you get around it? Does it work against aid? You know, there are lots of nafkaminas. But let's look bigger picture again. Why is this asr? So we have three possibilities. Why is it asr to ask another rabbi or to get an opposing psak from another rabbi? Kvodo shel rishon was number one. Number two, shlo yirik shtei taros. Number three, shavya nafshei chatichah d'yisura. Any nafkaminas between those? So the shach in Yardeis in Reish Mem Beis of Katan and Dalid says, quotes from Iran, even if the second chacham is matir, it's eino mutir. It's still not mutir. Now, if it's only mishum kvodos shel rishon, okay, so I was mevazel the first guy, but the second chacham is smarter, and he said that it's mutir, so it's mutir, right? So said the shach, no, it's not mutir. So it sounds not a din of kvodos shel rishon. It sounds more like a din of shavya nafshei or shlo yirik shtei taros, that you have to stick with the original iser. The Ramah in Sifla Menalv and Reish Mem Beis in Yardeis says kol ze ba'osa hora atzma. Unbelievable. Only if it's that very same shaila. But if the same exact circumstance comes up again, then you could learn from your past experience and not ask that rabbi and ask a different rabbi. Very interesting psak of the Ramah. What would that be based on? So if it's kvod shel rishon, that makes a lot of sense. Because it's not a bizayon to the rishon anymore, because this is a new shaila that you're asking. That's always a question. When do you have to ask a question again? And when can you say, you know what, I've already had this question in the past. I remember when we started my shul in North Woodmere, there were a number of the families had moved from Riverdale, and they were davening Rabbi Willig's shul prior to that. Now, Rabbi Willig had a psak, still has a psak, for the din of Menekes, that he holds that a woman is considered a Menekes as far as fasting the minor fast days, that she's patur from fasting the minor fast days for 24 months after the birth of the child, whether she's nursing or not. So automatically doesn't have to fast. So a lot of the, at that time, young women, I mean, they're still young, whatever, but, you know, at that time, they were Menekes women, they asked the Shiloh whether they have to ask the Shiloh again. Right now they're not in Riverdale anymore. Do they have to ask the shaila? Yes, Rabbi Willig, it's my Rebbe. You can try that. I mean, I wouldn't say the same thing, but still, you don't have to ask that shaila again. But that's also an interesting point that the Ramah has. What happens if sometimes you have a rabbi who gets so excited about a shaila that it wasn't even asked him and he answers it? he hears you hacking about a shayla. Oh, that's mamish aser is yarg val yaver, and he gets all excited about it. So that, this big Talmud Chacham just told me that it's aser. I wasn't even asking him a shayla, and that, so am I bound by that? You can't say shavi anavshei. I didn't even ask him, so there's no implicit shavi anavshei, right? Kvodo shel rishon, maybe once he already took a stand, it is a violation of kvodo shel rishon. You have to work through whether l'shel yirkishtei Torah certainly it would seem would be a problem, or that's a discussion in the Shailos Tshuvos Shivas Tzion Siman Chafei. He says Yitaka don't have to listen to him in that case. What if the second rabbi is greater than the first rabbi? So kvodo shel rishon, what do you mean the rishon should be mechabi the second guy who's a much greater rabbi? Shach quotes that that's a machlokes. The Ran in the name of the Ravid and the Rivash say you still can't, but the Marik, Rabin Yeruchim, and the Ran himself say that you can, that for sure he can. Can the second guy be more machmir? Like Mary was saying before, that if the second guy is being more machmir, Shavi Anav Shechatich Yisur is not going to apply when it was heter. It's not. It wasn't iser, right? Okay, so this is some of the lumdus behind it. But nu halacha lemaisa. So the Ramah says that if the guy is Toa B'Dvar Mishnah, the first rabbi was just absolutely mistaken, you're definitely allowed to paskin against him. If he was Toa B'Shikol Adas, he says, the second rabbi can go have a conversation with the first rabbi and come to an understanding that the psak is going to be different, and as long as they're both maskin. As long as you tell the second rabbi, you know, that they can do that. Or the first meeting, what's this based on? Meaning, what's the assumption over here? Kvod Shel Rishon. And if the Rishon is mochel on his kavod, so tamachach shmochel kvodo, perish gemara, kvodo machul. Why? What does the Morning Kiddushin say? Torah dilehu, it's his Torah, so he's allowed to be mochel on his kavod. So that would seem to be the correct course of action. So I told him, if you want to ask a shayla again, I said, you have to call the first rabbi and ask him if it's okay for you to ask the shayla again. And he said, okay, good, then can I bring it to you? I said, no, because I know the first rabbi, and I'll probably come to the same answer that he says. I suggested someone else that he bring the shayla to. He called the first rabbi, said, yeah, because I don't care, you know, ask whoever you want, I have no problem with it. And he called the rabbi that I recommended, and the second rabbi was Mekum. And he said it wasn't even a shayla. He thought that it was.
Does this apply like when you're growing up in a house and your parents have a rabbi?
No, I think there's a difference between minhag and halacha. So minhagim, you're supposed to follow your family minhagim. But if you disagree in halacha,
so
something
like Yom Tov Sheni, right? There's plenty of rabbis from communities that I can tell you that hold it's doing the old in Israel. I'm
saying. Yeah. So that's a matter of halacha. It's not a matter of minhag. It's a matter of how you paskin for a ben chutzlar. It's in Israel. There are plenty of rabbis that make a blatant mistake about that. Also, not plenty, but some that make just an obvious error about that. But that's for a different time. Meaning to say that you hold one day when you're in Eretz Yisrael, it's one thing. There are those that say you hold one day when you start off in Eretz Yisrael. That's should. Okay. All right. Anyway. For a different time. But then it occurred to me, wait a second. Okay, you're allowed to go ask another rabbi, but there is a requirement that when a woman is counting her seven clean days, that she has to be cognizant of the Shiva Nikiyan. And if she at any point thinks that it's over and that it's done and that she's Tameh, then she's no longer counting seven clean days and that ruins it. So even though she was Tameh, the fact that she thought she was Tameh might ruin it. So I thought, I just told him to go to another rabbi, get a Pesach, and it's going to be Mutter. Not so Pasha that it's going to be Mutter. Why? What's that based on? There's a Tshuvas Me'il Tzedakah in Simen Samach Gimel, quoted in the Pesachei Tshuva, that you can't have a Hesach Hadas during the Shiva Nikiyim for one of two reasons. First, he suggests, because what does the Torah say? V'safra la. She's supposed to count Shiva Nikiyim. Where else do we have a mitzvah of Svira in the Torah? Two other places. Svira Zomer and? Good. Svira Shnosei Yova. By Svira Zomer, how does one do Svira? By Yova, it's Beis Din. It's not an individual. By Svira Zomer, Svira L'Kol Echadecha. But how do you do it? How do you make the mitzvah? You make a bracha, and you say the words, right? You actually say verbally a count. So by Yanida, you have the same, by Yazava, you have the same thing. She counts. Hey, so there is a Shlach HaKadosh that says this, right? Shlach HaKadosh says that after she does the Bedika in the morning, she Chachma Zadva actually passes this way, that after she does a morning Bedika, she should count verbally. And the Nadav Yehuda famously in the Tshuva writes that the Shlach HaKadosh was such a holy Jew that sometimes the Jew is so holy that he loves mitzvahs so much that he's not satisfied with the mitzvahs that we already have, so he pretends to make new ones. So he says, Oiv mitzvahs lo yispa mitzvahs. He loves mitzvahs so much he's not satisfied with those, so he invented this new mitzvah that a Zava has to actually verbally count. No such thing, he says. He doesn't really she doesn't have to verbally count. So how do you count? It says to count. How do you count if you're not counting? So counting is being cognizant of it. And if you're not cognizant of the fact that it's Shivnikim, then you're not counting anymore. The other possibility is that there's a, for those who haven't learned Nida before, this is going to sound very foreign, but there's this notion of Dilma Argusha Velavadaita, that there's something that's called a Hargasha. When a woman has a Hargasha, it very likely makes her a Nida. She feels a Psichas Piyamakar or something. It very likely makes her a Nida, and only when she realizes that she's in the Shivnikim will she even be cognizant of whether that physiological thing is happening in her. But otherwise, she's not going to be cognizant of it. But anyway, we generally don't pass on like that reason. So there are poskim that are machmir about this, and therefore, for example, if a woman gets angry at her husband, she says, "That's it, I'm not going to the mikvah tomorrow night or whatever," and then they make up the next day, and she decides, "No, I do want to go." So there are poskim that say if she decided 100% that she wasn't going, her shivnikim is over, and that's it, and so she can't go. Rav Shlomrich talks about this shuvasad hagus chelikalav sim tafkav zayin. Or if, more commonly, a woman gets a shaila and she's convinced that this is bad. No rabbi is going to be mikla on this. So we always advise a kala, in the kala classes and the chasen in the chasen classes, and hopefully, you know, and as they get older as well, we remind them every once in a while, when you see a shaila that you think is problematic, you're supposed to be cautiously optimistic. Still be hopeful that it still might be the Shabbat. Don't just put it out of your mind and say, no, it's over, because that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy according to the Mil Tzedakah. So how long is a Hesach Hadas in this regard? Tshuvas Avnei Tzedek Sim Peivav, even a moment that she believes that she's in Nida, forget it, it's over. Rav Vosner in Shir Shevet Alevi says, no, only an Ona Shlema, meaning a full daytime or a full nighttime. Well, so now we have a little more room over here, right? Because this guy... it was during that same day, and not only that, the Chut Shani Rav Karelet, Rav Nissim Karelet, writes that it's only if she missed the Bedika, so it was an Onas Yom, it was during the daytime, and she skipped an actual Bedika, only then is it called as a Hadas. So the bottom line is, I thought we had plenty of room to be making over here. First of all, not everyone's convinced that the Mi'il Tzedakah is even right in the first place. There are many people that disagree with the Mi'il Tzedakah. Chuvas Marsham and Chel Gimelson and Kuf Yudal. Marsham was a Gadol HaPoskim. He was known as a very big Mekel also, but he was a Mikdol HaPoskim. Rav Asher Weiss just told us yesterday that when the Adaras went to Eretz Yisrael, you know the story of the Adaras? It's an unbelievable story. The Adaras was the father-in-law of Rav Kook. He was Rav Kook's father-in-law. So the Adaras was a Gonolam, Mamish a Gonolam. And I remember when my brother wrote his Sefer, my brother wrote his second Sefer called Nasiach B'chukecha on Klalei HaMitzvos. So someone sent him that the Adaras wrote the same type of Sefer, meaning my brother wrote on the Chayadim Klal Samaches, which goes through all the Klalim of Mitzvos. He's Magdim Mitzvos, he's Mavir Mitzvos, Mitzvos, Mishlucho, like a chapter on each of those things. So someone sent him that the Adaras wrote the same thing. So he was very nervous. Oh no, I just wrote the same thing that the Adaras. But he looked it up, the Adaras had a very different style. Rav Asher Weiss just wrote the same Sefer now. Rav Asher Weiss just came out with the Sefer also in Klalei HaMitzvos. And he knew about my brother's Sefer because he wrote Haskamah to my brother's Sefer. So he said to me, I'm going into competition with your brother. But don't worry, I dreamt up Klalim he never would have thought about. Rav Asher Weiss. But, so the Adaras, the story of the Adaras was he went to Eretz Yisrael because he was supposed to take over as Rav Yerushalayim for Shmuel Salant. Shmuel Salant was an old man, he was a 90-year-old man. The Adaras was 50, 40 years his junior. And they were assuming that Shmuel Salant was, not long for the job, and this way he could be groomed. You bring in the assistant rabbi as the old rabbi is getting old, and you groom him for the position. And Shmuel Salant outlived the Adaras. Shmuel Salant was maspid the Adaras. The Adaras died very, very young. He was in his early 50s. 95-year-old Shmuel Salant was Masbid Yaderes. Unbelievable. But why did I mention this? Oh, yeah. So Rav Asher told us that the Yaderes asked the Marsham before he went to Eretz Yisrael, he asked him if a rabbi, now that he's going into Rabbanus, you know, in his 50s, it's not like in America where if you're 24 and you don't already have a shteller, then you know you have to start worrying about, like, you know. So you learn a little bit first. You know? So he was going into to Rabbanus in his he wanted to know, is a rabbi entitled to any personal time? Right? Any knock on the door, does he automatically have to get out of bed or whatever, you know, deal with anything 24/7? Or can you, like, hang a sign on the door? Look, I'm resting between 2 and 3 or whatever, you know. So Marsham, right? We have in Shuvas Marsham. Marsham writes back: a rabbi is entitled to personal time. It's just my personal hanhaga is that everyone in my family knows that I don't take it. That anyone who knocks on my door at any time for any reason whatsoever, that that I immediately get up and do whatever. Mind blowing, you know. But anyway, the Marsham was known as a very big maker. Marsham disagrees with this mil tzedakah, but he's not the only one. There are others that disagree with this mil tzedakah. So first of all, it wasn't a full ona that they, and second of all, I wasn't sure that that there was a hezek hadas over here. Why wasn't I sure that there was a hezek hadas and that they had given up hope?
Maybe
he didn't tell her. But more because he asked me. If he's calling, what was he calling? I don't think he was just calling for a hug. I think he was calling for a way out. He really wanted another, right? So
usually if the wife has more tmimus
then. What?
Usually the wife has more tmimus then.
Yeah, okay. But, right. It depends on her das. But it could be that he didn't tell her yet. You know, that he was waiting on. I then realized that at the beginning of the conversation with him, I just told him there's nothing he could do. I didn't even think of the idea of calling another rabbi. So at that point, if she would have been on the phone, there would have been a hezek hadas. But she wasn't on the phone. But even then, the hezek hadas may not have been for a long enough time. So I thought we could be mixed. So I asked Rav Asher Weiss what he thought. He said, yeah. He said, I always tell people to go ask somebody else. It is a practice of many rabbanim not to paskin the chumra. They'll say, I can't be mekel on this. That's the nusach of, that's what I always say. I can't be mekel on this. Why do I say that? Because if you want to go bring it to someone else, I don't care if you bring it. Go bring it to whoever you want. You want to shop to Borough Park and find a Hasidic Rav who's going to, you know, or Queens. And, you know, Rabbi Oldham has a very different Masorah than the non-Hasidic Masorah. He's a huge, he's a Kohen Olam. You know, you can definitely be Samech. Rav Mati Neuberger told me that when he got Shemesh from his father, from Rabbi Neuberger, and he was living in Queens, and he had a shaila, he wasn't going to go to Teaneck, and he went to Rabbi Oldham, and Rabbi Oldham was Mekel, and Mati was looking at, like, he had Shemesh, he knew a little bit. He said, this can't be, and he called his father. His father said, what are you, crazy? He said, Kohen Olam, how do you question it? You follow the psak when you ask a person of that stature, you follow the psak. So I thought that, so Rav Asher Weiss said also that he didn't think that it was a problem at all. The other shayla we're not going to have time together. Okay, with 5 minutes, there's no chance. Sorry. Well, maybe we'll save it for a different time. But it's just way too deep and complicated. Okay. Have a wonderful Shabbos, everybody.